Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This program is made possible thanks to the generosity of our listeners. Show your support at heritageradionetwork.org/donate.
This week on Meat and Three, we're talking about comfort food as we explore its history, meaning, and different interpretations from around the world.
Donburi is just a simple, casual dish, but it's packed with the history.
Somebody might have their comfort food be something that they remember eating at their friend's house, but they would never have at their own home. Consuming foods that were eaten then can bring back some of those feelings from those times.
It's about creating these little breaks and moments during the day where you kind of feel present.
Tune in to Meat and Three, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hi everyone, this is part two of my conversation with the Ginjan brothers, diving into the details of building an African food brand in the US. We ended our conversation on raising funds for the business and pick up from there in this final half of the conversation. If you missed the first part, I highly recommend going back to listen before getting into this conversation. Here's the show.
One thing away from this conversation, do the math first.
I mean, with all seriousness though, if you do the math, then you won't get surprised when you get knocked out.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, of course I knew it. What it would allow you to do is just be more realistic and try to figure out a different angle or different way of doing things. Okay. So the math is extremely important. But yeah, thanks for pointing that out. But we did have to do the math because we wanted to know what to do, how to do it, and how to do it right. And the way we came to that was simply what we thought at first was the most realistic way of doing it, meaning doing part of the production ourselves with needing certain equipment, doing the another part with a co-packer, because then we don't have to shell out something like, I think most, if you want a full line, a high-end full line, you can spend anywhere between $10 million dollars or
Whoa.
More build out your own facility with everything, all the so you know, I've seen numbers up to 75 million, you know.
Yeah.
So you can, this
depending
number can vary
to build,
and can go really high, really fast. So we thought, we narrowed that down to 1.5 million, you know. We would just need this and that, we would get our suppliers this way, we would get our bottling that way, we would have this many people to start with in our team. And that was, we thought, very conservative. And so we had our business plan. We called a couple of friends. We were so excited. We presented it to them. And then they gave us a look like we were crazy, rightfully so. We presented to a few other people, and we quickly realized as this was going on that we would never get that money.
You wanted to know what went into that math, right? It's very straightforward. We thought we need a facility to make it in. We need some equipment to do one part of the process, like my brother alluded to, and then second part to the good use of co-packer. We needed a truck to distribute all that and, like, you know, do some marketing locally. We needed sales and marketing people to build the brand once we go live. So really, we just simulated what the company would look like if we launched, like if we need an accountant,
yeah.
all of that. I mean, the ideal scenario to launch it. You know what I mean? And we put a price tag and all of that. How much does an accountant cost? How much space do we need? What's the rent for a space like that in the South Bronx where there are a bunch of factories or whatever you want to, like, on and on and on. And then enough
and not to ignore the store counts that we want to start with. So do we want to start with 100 locations? Do we want to go push and try to grow into 1,000 locations? So all that goes into that. And then how much would it take? What's the starting capital for that?
And then so, enough runway for say 6 months to a year.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was gonna ask you. So it's not just the CapEx at the beginning, but you're also looking at operating expenses for X number of months post launch. Okay, got it. Wow. That for me would be scary. That would be scary. That would be daunting just to see that number. But you're right. I think it would be helpful to see the number and then like sort of maybe shock you into reality as you think about the different options you have.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And it was then that we almost gave up at that point because it's like, okay, there's no way we can get 1.5 million. We're talking to people and they're looking at us like, giving us that look. And so that's when it dawned upon us, hey, if our mother can make this in their kitchen, and give it to us or sell it on the side of the street, there's gotta be a much cheaper way of doing this. And it wasn't easy to find that formula or to figure out a way to do it and scale it at that smaller level. It was extremely difficult, but we figured, because people were just saying, okay, this is a really good idea. Like, anyone who knows Africa or who's had the product, the first few people that we presented were people that had a little bit of money that we knew about in the community through introductions and such. So they understood it, but they just didn't believe in it. They thought it was too ambitious. It was just too big of a thing to do. So, and they wanted to see what the product was. So we went on and we said, okay, let's go ahead and create a product and show them the product, and we did that. And eventually then they went, okay, you have the product, you have 2 or 3 stores, but can you really get into stores? Can you get into more stores? We went and got into 30 to 40 stores by ourselves while holding a full-time job. It was our bi-weekly checks that was funding this, by the way, as we were going.
Okay, so then initially, it's your salaries, right? So
yeah,
that's the
initially our salary. And then we ran into eventually one person that actually believed in us a little bit. He gave us, he made a small investment that allowed us to say, okay, now we can go and try to see if we can get a distributor really quickly. And at the same time, we engaged Whole Food immediately. But this was a very modest investment.
It was $25,000.
Yeah. Yeah. So
that was our first outside money.
Yeah. That's, I mean, again, a relative, right? So for our community, someone hears that, they're like, whoa. But I guess, relatively speaking, in terms of the bigger market that you're competing in, you're right. That's probably not significant.
That's what I call a dangerous amount of money.
You know what we call that?
No.
Use enough rope to hang yourself. Enough to get you deep into the thing, and then you're out of money So essentially, that money ran out fast, but thankfully, we were able to secure Whole Food by then, and we were able to get a distributor as well. And we had been applying nonstop. So if you cannot get funding the traditional route, you got to find out a creative way. So every competition that we heard of, whether it's $1,000 prize or $10,000 or $100,000, we would enter the competition.
Okay.
And we thought the hope was to at least be finalists. Even if you don't win, just the presence of just our presence at the event, or the people will get to hear and see the brand.
We were applying to things we knew for sure we don't qualify for, right? Like, it's like some competition on, artificial intelligence, software, right? We'll apply to it. I'm not joking when I say this, And now our whole thinking was, one person is going to review these applications. That person will know our brand exists from now.
Yeah.
That was literally, we have time, we don't have money. So anything that that's how we used our time, more or less.
So game changer. So there's a lot of, as you can see, as much as we're good at planning, there was a lot of willpower and devotion to suffering. Allowing ourselves to suffer, because as we were running out of money, we were lucky enough, we won 2 prizes within the same month, which was the FedEx National Grand Prize contest, which was a $25,000 award, and we won an American Entrepreneurship Award, which was also $25,000.
Oh, nice!
That just changed. It was the first time we had enough money to be able to actually do something, to do a little bit of test marketing here and there, to allow ourselves to get into more accounts and amongst other things. So, for us, that was the game changer. So, as you if you're paying attention, we still have not gotten money for this
This was about a year and a half in.
Okay. So at this point, year and a half in, you've essentially bootstrapped, right, with salaries and then now grants at this point.
Exactly.
And at that point, the two of us were working full time and doing the job of about a dozen people. So no sleep.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy.
But this is what it takes for us to be able to do things like this, to grow things like this. And our belief is, as long as you're willing to go on and you keep going and you do so, things that are just excellent, somebody out there will eventually see you and appreciate what you do and accept the greatness of what you're doing and come along. So
we're still looking for those people, by the way.
If you're out there, they're still looking.
Yeah, so essentially we kept trying to raise. Here is the thing too. If you get to start your business and you're actually doing okay and you're surviving and you're trying to build it, another decision we made earlier was we were never going to undersell ourselves. We would never, out of desperation, make a stupid decision, you know. I don't know if my brother mentioned this before. We got invited to, a potential investor invited us to Hong Kong.
No, you know? I haven't heard this story.
Yeah, like, you know, flight, hotel all paid for. We get there, you know, we're having dinner in Michelin star hotels, restaurants. And we get in there, there's a lot of the dinner is pretty much intimidating. It's his best, it's his accountants from all over the world and all of these different people. And after all of that, we get essentially insulted and given like a quite poor offer. Now, for most people at that point, especially given the situation we were in,
the Michelin stars.
They was like, oh my God, you know. And it was a really hard decision because we really, really needed that at that time and we were in a really difficult spot. But we had to turn it down and it was a lot of money, you know. So,
relatively speaking. Well, it was 350K. It was 350K, roughly around there, for a ridiculous percentage of the business.
I was gonna say. So this was an equity. So they wanted equity in the business. Okay, equity stake, not an outright sale.
No.
Yeah. No. 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 I mean, we were willing to give up quite a bit of equity, but it was just insane. You know what they were asking for. So I mean, if you end up working so hard and eventually you find yourself towards where you want to be, but then you're working for someone else again, then that's not very joyful. You know, we do want to, and the other thing is you got to think about how big you want to make your business. If you took that and we gave up half of it, we would never have enough of the business remaining to do the following round to get the business to where it needs to be. So that's that. So eventually we left that and we had a couple of other meetings with a few other people. You know, at that point we were more excited because at least we were finally getting meetings, you know.
We turned it down, by the way.
Yeah, but I think that also should send a signal to you, right, that you're on the right track, even if the valuation at that point is not what you think it is. I think as a budding entrepreneur, the fact that someone is even willing to put down some money should set up.
Totally,
the signal
it was a fantastic experience. We enjoyed it a lot, and
it's funny. It was an odd thing, right? Because on one side, you know, we're putting on our entrepreneurial hats on and going, "No, this is a horrible deal. We're not making the deal." But at the same time, we're going, man, I can't believe somebody wants to give us $350,000. You know what I mean? For any percentage of our business, you know? So you're right. It was very validating.
Yeah. And really, we got the best we could out of it. You know, whenever we meet with someone, even, even if whether they say no or we say no, we always took the best out of it. We could. We got as much advice as we could out of it. You know, even if 80% of it is nonsense, that 20% is the most valuable thing. And we take that and we just use that for the following meeting or the following person we have to speak to. So, you know, it's very, very challenging to, you know, how do you value a company you've killed yourself to build?
Right.
But yet, you know, you're not able to take advantage of all of the opportunities that are in front of you because you know you will. That's the other thing. We have had so many people reach out to a store in terms of stores to expand, to grow. We keep saying no. Because we know we will grow ourselves out of business.
Oh, got it.
So it's very important to know your limits too and just keep yourself there till you know you're ready to get to the next step. If you can find a way to make that work, congratulations to you. But for us, it's very important to say, thank you so much, but not yet. You know, give us a little bit more time. You know, we're working towards being able to work with you and get into the place we need to be. But, you know, just give us a little bit more time. So as we kept doing this, it just got harder and harder and harder. But at the same time, we had a lot of friends reaching out to us saying, hey, I love what you guys are doing. At that time, we were becoming a bit more visible. Mm. And people will realize that, you know, we were really serious about this. It wasn't just something we started for fun and, you know. And friends would call and say, hey, I have $500. I would love to invest in your company, or $1,000 here and there. And we kept saying no, 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 because it just wasn't enough for us to do much of anything. And then we would have taken their money. But as this kept growing, we said, what are we doing? Why are we saying no to these people? There's a lot of them and they want to work with us. They want to be part of what we're doing. And literally, like, there's nothing better than having your friends win if you end up winning at the end of the day. So, and so we did an equity crowdfunding campaign.
Oh, and yeah, we could raise
$182,000, essentially, from 261 investors. It was amazing. And around that time, we had also decided to open up the cafe and get that going. And that's how we got to where we are. So no $1 million investment. It's really just our, you know, strong desire to build this thing no matter what it takes, and a few lucky breaks in terms of winning those grants. The way I see it is either we will eventually get the big investment required to scale this and grow this quickly, because we do have everything in place to get that done quickly, or, you know, it will be a slow, small, gradual build. You know, one cafe now, maybe a second one, and then eventually we'll, as we grow throughout the Northeast, we'll eventually go toward the regions and territories as we grow. And it'll be a nice, slow build. And we will have to be extremely patient in that way. But it's one or the other. We would love to get the investment, but if it doesn't come, we're not going anywhere. Like, we'll find other ways.
So are you both now working on this full time? Do you have a team? Like, what's the current status in terms of working versus the brand?
Oh yeah, we run this full time. The two of us are on it full time. We have a designer that we have on retainer that, you know, creates some of the visuals that you see on social media and places like that. And we ended up having to let go of pretty much most of our employees at the cafe, and we have one employee there. So it's just it's not much has changed. So we've built quite a bit since we started.
Yeah.
We don't have this massive team behind us that we're you know, that's powering everything you've seen. We're in the process of actually raising a larger round with the idea of expanding, because we have a distributor that covers most of the the East Coast, really, that has over 4,000 points of sale we can go to. Yeah, so like we can literally activate that next week if we could. But putting product in 4,000 locations and not have sales and marketing team to support it is suicide, right?
Yeah.
We're in, we're in Whole Foods already. But
yep, I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah, so we're in there, but then we could grow into more other stores. But again, in order for us to do that, we need personnel that we have to hire and pay and make all that happen. So really, we're in the middle of we're in the middle of raising capital again. But this one, hopefully.
We're a little more optimistic this time.
Are you, so when you say raising capital, is this, are you looking at VCs? Like what channel are you going down for this one?
Both, we're looking to raise anywhere, on the low end, $2 million, on the high end, more than $5 million this round. And really the difference, you might wonder why it's such a big range. It's really doing more or less of the same thing we would do, right? It's just if we raise more money, we can move quicker, we can open more quicker, we can expand our footprint in the retail quicker, we can add on, activate more of the SKUs that we already are selling at the coffee shop. So we have four drinks altogether.
E-com,
be more aggressive online. So that's it. It's on the lower end. We'll do a little less of that, And we're targeting VCs, angels, yeah, pretty much anyone that's looking to put some money to work.
Awesome. So I actually wanted to talk to you about VC funding in general, because back to, I think it was Mohammed's point earlier about us not being the right fit sometimes for these funding models or capital raising models, just by virtue of what people are looking for, or the typical entrepreneur that they're looking for, what they're looking to invest in, just based on your discussions, experiences with different VCs, if there have been that many, what I guess for the people that are listening, want them to get a sense of a flavor of what it's like to interact with VCs with a product like yours that's sort of steeped in African culture or context, and what that means when you're talking, I'm guessing, mostly to American VCs.
All of us at HRN have been keeping busy despite working and recording from home. This fall, we're proud to announce new shows on the network that each bring important and enlightening stories to listeners around the world. While the world is in turmoil and the future of our country is uncertain, there are certain constants that help keep us going. For us, food and storytelling are essential. While we can't come together in person, food podcasts from HRN can provide a virtual table we can all gather around. Bringing exceptional stories to your ears and keeping you informed on the ever-changing political and environmental issues of our time is integral to our mission. At a time when the world around us is rapidly changing, HRN is committed to being here for our listening community, and we need you to be here for us. Join our table and help ensure the future of food radio by becoming a member of HRN. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/donate to make a contribution. Check out the latest additions to our lineup while you're there. You can see all of our series at heritageradionetwork.org/new shows.
Here's the thing with VCs. First and foremost, they want to invest in things that make money, right? So the first thing they look for is that they're looking for companies that are already making money, pretty much de-risk altogether. And, you know, it's, they just put in their money and harvest at the end. Now, of course, you see the reaction, obvious reaction to that is, well, duh, right?
Yeah.
short of that, it's okay. You want to have enough signals for them to believe that you're going to make them a lot of money.
Yeah.
So if it's a venture capitalist that invest in later stage companies, that's a lot easier. They have a lot more metrics to go off of and so on. If it's people that invest in early stage companies, if you're at the idea stage, or you just literally just have a proof of concept and a nice PowerPoint, right now they have to look to other indicators or whatever it is that in their minds convinces them that you fit the profile of someone that can make this happen. So these indicators, the most obvious ones tend to be your pedigree, where you went to school, mm-hmm. right? If you went to an Ivy League, that gets you through the door in some ways, and so on. Now, the other thing that comes into play there is race. Unfortunately, because that does factor in, right? They look for VCs that fit a pattern of something they know. So if you're a venture capitalist, the only people you've seen succeed in whatever space are young white kids that went to a certain school, that's what you're going to look for. Yeah. Because if you invest in those guys and it doesn't pan out, no one's going to give you a hard time. You invest in someone that does not fit the mold and it doesn't pan out, you have a lot more explaining to do. Right. This is just me giving them the benefit of doubt at some point, you know.
Yeah.
Beyond that, you have those that really just don't believe, that would not invest in young black kids because, you know, it's a society they grew up in and they have no indicator that people like us can do things like this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And really that's the way I look at it. And so for us, we have the added challenge of, okay, we're young black immigrants. The only two things that would have made it maybe more challenging if you were a Black woman or if you were, you know, Black, you know, a female and handicapped at the same time. You're an immigrant, you know, you're Black, you're first-time founder, all these come into play. So they keep moving the goalpost, right? Some people will say, oh, come see us when you have a distributor, right? You come back to them when you have, you go, you come back, you have a distributor. Oh, come see me when you have, you know, who carries you? Like they want to know a big name anchor.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, we have Whole Foods. Okay, how many stores? You tell them, okay, come back to us when you double that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the goalpost keeps moving. So you have that. And yeah, that's yeah,
and if I may add, even if you don't look at it on a racial these are biases that are built in that they don't even realize they are, even if they're not.
Exactly.
So one of the ways they get a lot of us out of the ability to be invested in or even apply is most VCs will ask for a minimum of $1 million revenue.
Yep. On a run rate of $1 million.
Of $1 million. How many people in our community do you know
yeah.
who start a business with even more than, you know, $50,000 or $100,000? Not many, but most of us save, we manage to save $5,000 to $10,000. We get something started, you know, we do maybe a revenue of $50,000 or $60,000, which is amazing, you know, I feel like. Or even we may get close to the $100,000 after a year or two. And that to us, that's incredible. It's like, wow, like I built this from scratch, from nothing. And but to them, it's like, well, we only look at business, you know, we only accept businesses on a run rate of $1 million or more. So by that virtue, you need to build your company up for like 10 years to get to that point to be able to even apply to them. And that's the challenge. If you're in tech, maybe you're lucky enough, you have a few co-founders that fit the right profile and everything else. Maybe they'll take a chance on you. But like just mainly being Black or woman in general, it's you don't necessarily get the benefit of the doubt. Even if everything is perfect the way it should be, it can be a bit challenging sometimes. Most of the guys that these guys invest in, this is what happened, okay? Not all of them, but most of them, this is what happens. They like my brother was saying, and I said earlier, they went to the right school. They have an idea. They go, they do a friends and family round. Generally, you know, the median income of white America is much, much, much higher.
Yeah.
It's in 130 or 140 thousand. 117,000 average. And for Black Americans, it's around what last I checked, it was around 7,000. I think both of those numbers have gone up now. That's the median income of a family. It's a huge disparity. So when you're looking at friends and family, who has the most friends? So usually these guys will get funded by their mom and dad or their friends, or they have a home or two. They can put one on, you know, as collateral.
Collateral.
So getting $100,000 to $500,000 just as a seed or just to get their idea started, it's fairly simple. And once they have the idea, like, hey, look, we have this. It tastes good. It looks good. We just need $750,000 to $1 million to get it going. And they can get that fairly easily or get a loan from a bank fairly easily because they have all these assets and all these other things they can put up. If you have $1 million, how hard is it for you to make another million? And now they're in a position to go after these VCs and get the money. So this is the somewhat of the frustration or some of the challenges that, you know, we tend to go through. But we just look at it as just a way of learning and finding out how things are and how things work. And eventually, ultimately, we will get to that. And then we will be able to, again, give them a chance to say no. But that's where we are, really. That's the challenge. But, you know, you know, being a little more optimistic, if you are just thinking of starting the business in the early stages, your best bet is, you know, don't waste your time too much on bigger VCs who only fund round, you know, Series A and Series B. You know, go to the pre-seed or seed funds. You know, there's a lot of angel groups out there that are doing that. If you're a woman, there's actually a much bigger push now to fund women. And you will likely be able to get, you know, like a 10 to 25,000 investment if they really, really like what you do and they believe in what you do. But again, that's only going to be enough to get you started and get you going.
Enough rope, right?
Yeah. If you're at the idea stage, honestly, I would say Don't waste any time going after anybody unless you're proven, entrepreneur, right? You can point to something you've done that to a total stranger and they'll be like, oh, okay, right? Like some sort like that to give you validation. Maybe go after friends you may know, family you know. I will not say don't go to investors. Maybe you're much better, you know, at raising money than we are, right? But if I have to do this over again, knowing what I know today, some of the time we spent chasing after capital early on, because after the first year, we're like, all right, you know what? Every indicator that we've had is get a proof of concept, get some retailers, show that your product moves, and go out there and get a friends and family, like a pre-seed round. So we relaxed, we shifted our focus to that, and we ended up leading to nothing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think especially if you don't have a product, don't even incorporate a company. Focus on getting your product. I'm serious. Yeah. Focus on getting your product right, getting something people like, people are going to, you know, buy or not just your friends tasting it and loving it, but something that someone will literally give you money for.
Yeah.
You know, and then start worrying about everything else. And after that, get the branding right. Try to get some retailers. Get people paying you before you go to anyone trying to find money. Because otherwise, I this is my personal belief, I think you'll waste a lot of energy and not get as far.
No, I think you should definitely apply regardless in terms of precedence and seed round angel groups and VCs, simply because it will give you an opportunity to practice your pitch. You know, and enter competitions. Competitions are probably the best way, the easiest way to get something. It's still very challenging, but it's one of the way. But I think if anything, you may get something. If nothing, you know, be positive, you know, ask for questions, ask them why they're not picking you. And that may open up doors, or they may even give you a tip that actually may change how you do business completely. You know, sometimes it's not something really you can use or you can do. So you keep it moving. But, you know, we've gotten we understood the psychology and gotten some really good feedback here and there with them. And some of them still reach back out to us because they're actually paying attention. They just don't want to take a risk. They want to wait till we are making money. And their money is pretty much guaranteed. And at that point, we'll have the advantage.
Yeah.
But do that. And also warm intros are amazing. You know, sometimes it's your customers. They'll know someone, they love what you do so much that they may introduce you to a person, and that warm intro may lead to something better than you would have a higher odds than let's say meeting a random investor.
Yeah.
Wow,
good advice. I'm just watching the time. I know we're over time. Just how much time do you have left so we can start wrapping up? I know we've gone over
10 minutes.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So just, I guess this is all really helpful. And as you were talking about, you know, the different conversations you're having with VCs and tips and whatnot, I remember an anecdote I saw one of you share. I think it may have been Raheem actually, about someone who told you guys to tone down the Africa in your pitches. Yeah. And it just, like, I remember hearing that and just being so, because I feel like that is the selling point. I don't know what your take was. I mean, obviously you haven't done that, but to hear that, for me, that's your unique selling proposition, right? And so to hear somebody say that to you, especially from their background, I think they work for a major bottler or something like that.
Yeah, it's a former, it was a former Coca-Cola employee, I think.
Exactly.
And he meant, honestly, like, you could tell that he meant well, you know? Like, okay, this guy said that for a reason, right? If he's interacting with us for the first time ever, and that's the first thing that comes to mind, that goes to the point of us trying to do this to really change the way, you know, African everything is perceived. Coca-Cola sells millions upon millions of dollars worth of products in Africa.
Yeah.
But you know what I mean? This is how this guy still reacts. And honestly, we've had, you know, before we went live, we had Africans, you know, like, you think that it's too, I mean, we have the map of Africa in the middle of our logo. You know what I mean? It was too in your face. That's how they felt. But just the way you reacted, we feel like if we remove the African angle, the story of these products being, you know, like traditional to us, or that has been in our families for generations and generations. If you remove all of that, we're just another company mixing juices and selling them.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. Which, and we would not have done it if that was the reason, you know.
Yeah, and it's not turning the Africa up or down. It's just what it is. It's just who we are. And
yeah,
we're very happy that we stayed the course. You know, because we've had even friends call us and say, "Hey, you might want to remove that because you know you may not sell as well or as much." But today, no complaint. People love it. People come in because of that, and people support it. And not just Africans. We have a huge percentage of our clients that are not African, that are people that would be in states that you would not go to.
our audience is over 90% of our audience is non-African. And
that's interesting.
You know, yeah, we of course we want Africans to embrace this, and those that know of us embrace it, you know, wholeheartedly and support us. But this is exactly this is proving the point that, you know, our products can do well outside of our own communities. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think this idea of changing people's view of Africa doesn't just apply to people that are non-African. It applies to Africans themselves.
As well, yeah. That's a whole other conversation. More so, yeah. And I would agree. Yeah. I would agree. That's a whole conversation.
Yeah.
just quickly, we talked a lot about, or you mentioned as you talked about distribution, distributors. If we could quickly just tell people, how did you get your first distribution contract, if you will, the first buyer that said, yes, I'm going to put this on my shelf, the first major buyer? So let's say Whole Foods. What was the Whole Foods journey like?
Yeah, so Whole Foods is a retailer. We wouldn't consider them a distributor. So there are companies outside of the retailers that would actually go and do all of that for you. But you know, it's part of it is really due to our past experiences. We are fearless when it comes to talking to people or selling. You know, we've gone through some really rough times. We've done all sorts of jobs. And so what we did is mainly just we started, you know, sort of all narrowing down which distributor we want to go after, which distributors sell our type of product. Because if you're selling a cold or a frozen product and you go to someone who only does shelf stable stuff, that's the wrong distributor for you, because they cannot carry your product. So we narrowed it down to a few. And then the next step of it is very important. We called some of the people that they carried to see what kind of distributor they are, because there are some horrible distributors out there. Even the good ones are not so great. So you definitely don't want to be with a distributor who's not going to pay you. So that's the easy part. Now, then comes the hard part, convincing the ones you selected to carry you, essentially. So most distributors will not want to carry you if you have nothing, if you haven't done anything and you're not anywhere. So you cannot just have a really good product. And unless you have a really good connection and tons of marketing money, and just go to a distributor and say, "Hey, I want to put this product. Can you distribute me?" In our case, we did talk to them early enough and say, "Hey, we just wanted to know what it takes to be distributed by you guys." And we got some good information, and we even learned how distributors work a little bit by doing that. But eventually, we went and built our own accounts, about 50 or 60. When we got to about 60 accounts, we knew it was time, and we were actively building. So it was nice to be able to come and say, "Hey, distributors, and we have these additional 60 accounts that you can have, and you can carry places that you might not be at this moment." But the way that happened was quite unique, because you were trying to talk to Whole Foods. Whole Foods wanted us to have a distributor before they would carry them. And we were talking to a distributor, and they wanted us to have a major account before you could. So we told both we had it. And so one of the things was, this was genius, my brother Rahim did actually, was he would write to them and then ship the products immediately at the same time. So by the time they read their email, like the same day the product shows up,
they're drinking their ginger and while they're reading the email.
Let me try this. And we were lucky that we had a very unique product, and some of them, a couple of them reached back out to us and said they were interested in talking. Cool. And that's how that happened, to be honest with you.
Cool. And I think that's an interesting distinction, because that's new to me. I mean, maybe those in this space know. I didn't understand the concept of distribute. I thought people usually work directly with a buyer to retailer, but there's bulk distributors, it sounds like, that can get you into these accounts. Interesting. Good stuff. There's so much we could cover. We are running out of time, unfortunately. Yeah. So what's next for you guys? What's the next big thing? I mean, I think COVID has obviously had an impact on your business, probably changed what you were thinking about doing this year. But as you think about the rest of the year, 2021 and down the road, what's
your outlook? I mean, we'll stay the course. I think we should be all right. We just want to see what happens after these elections and then based on that, we will make the bigger decisions. But for now, we're just thankful that we're still around. We're still here. We've been doing much more business online with the shift of everything happening online. And we're still doing okay with Whole Foods. So one of the reasons why we're raising this round now is we think that this is actually a great time for us people in our position to take opportunities, to take on these risks and challenges, because people that are in great position, they're too scared right now to act or to do anything.
Yeah.
And I think there are a lot of opportunities out there right now. If you look beyond this and you see, okay, how can I position myself or put myself in a position to excel in 2021 or 2022? So once we raise this money, I think you may see a second or a third Jinjang Cafe. You may see us a bit more on your phone, annoying you with ads. And that's more or less it.
Cool.
Yeah, we're fortunate enough that we're in the food business, so regardless of what happens to the economy at large, people still have to eat and drink. If we just have to figure out ways to make sure that we're top of mind when people are deciding how to figure out what to eat or drink, you know.
Cool. So before we
thing, we'll next month most likely, and by the end of the year anyways, we'll start having proper actual African food at the cafe.
Oh, awesome!
You can come get some real jollof rice. All you Ghanaians and Nigerians,
we'll have to come and test to be sure it's proper jollof rice now. So where can people find you online, social media, if they want to support you, or even if they're based in New York, where can they find you in Harlem?
If you want to listen to the longest interview ever made on this podcast. You can find us at drinkjinjan.com, drinkjinjan, GINJAN.com. Our handle on social is at Jinjan Bros, GINJANBROS. And we actually respond to people ourselves most of the time. Please reach out if you have any questions.
Yeah.
Cool. And then, so we'll do this very quickly, more quickly than we do with most our rapid fire segments. So maybe we'll do one at a time so I don't know who wants to go first, but coffee or tea preference?
Tea right now.
Okay. I thought you would push your ginger latte, which I had and was phenomenal, by the way. Sorry, go ahead. You're gonna say?
No, go ahead. It's rapid, so we gotta go. Okay.
Morning person or night person?
Night.
This one is for the two of you. Your biggest pet peeve about your brother.
We need a new podcast for that.
Oh my God, I don't know.
Quick, first thing that comes to mind.
My brother's too nice. I'm serious. he needs to be a little more cold-blooded. That's my pet peeve.
my brother over-educates people. But as I try to tell him, you cannot educate people beyond their understanding.
true. And then this last one, I guess for both of you together, I guess you've won, I guess Jinjan Brothers has won an award, or the two of you individually, for your most notable achievement. What would this award be called?
This is not one we've gotten before. So it's Well, it's,
I think I just, we just want people to remember me personally. I just want people to think of me as a good guy.
You know, the good guy I was. Nice guy.
Yeah. Well, I think it's, there's nothing that feels better right now than friends coming and saying, "Hey, because of you guys, we had the courage to go and get our own business going." And some of them have done it and are doing extremely well. So I don't know, some sort of inspirational award.
Inspirational award. Cool. Yeah. That's a great note to end on, because I think even though we've gone way over what we planned to do, I think your story is inspirational. I thank you so much for being open and candid about your journey, the specifics of it, because I think as we try to move forward in our own lanes in terms of what we want to do in this space, it's also helpful to, you know, reach back, inform, support others that are also trying to make their path here, so that as a community, we sort of uplifting all of us together as we, what do they say, rising tides lift all boats.
Right,
so really appreciate you sharing and being as candid as you were. And we'll be looking forward to supporting you as you grow into a multi-billion dollar business.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for
extending us your platform. It means the world to us, you know, anyone that gives us a time of day, you know. So thank you for that. And for your audience too, for tuning in. If for those that are listening that may be looking to go into the food space, whether they're here or in Africa, especially in the traditional African food space, I encourage you. I mean, we're doing this for us. We believe in this. And I think there's a lot of room for growth in it. And one company or one team cannot do it all, right? So definitely do it. It's hard. Don't let all the scary stories we've just told you dissuade you. You know, definitely go for it and reach out to us if we can be helpful.
Yeah, it only takes two or three successes for people to, you know, drop their guard and realize that we are worth investing in. We're worth following. And so, you know, the more of us, the merrier. So
do it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to Item 13, an African food podcast. If you like the show, please subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast app. To keep up to date, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Item 13 Podcast. Item 13 is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awele, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries, like why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode. Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.